CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, folks, and welcome to another Auto Central show. And today we have an exciting lineup. My name is George Meany, and this is Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader, and I'm joined with the yawning Martin Pretorius. How are you, Martin?
How's it, George? Hello, Lawrence and Wandy as well, and hi to the listeners. Nice to be back.
And then the one and only Wandy Lesishi.
Breathing my butt off, but I'm also here. Hi to everyone.
Which then puts this podcast squarely in the middle of winter and in the middle of our cold front. And then none other than Lawrence Meany, who has the fanciest background of us all.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. It's always great to be back. I am rocking my brand new Auto Trader body warmer.
Oh.
These are getting me through the frosty days.
Check it out.
And I see everybody else is wearing theirs as well.
Wow.
Sweet.
Yeah. I've got one up on you. I've got my Auto Trader mug. be that as it may, let's get straight into it and do some news. In our first story, surprise, surprise, and I suppose what you're going to hear from Martin is "I told you so." The petrol price increase is going to take us to 15.45 at the beginning of August after a 34% increase in 95 unleaded fuel inland. Obviously, the coastal region is different to that, but 15.45, and at the moment we're on 15.12 for a litre of 95 fuel. And you know, what's interesting, gentlemen, is that during lockdown, when we all couldn't drive our cars, the lowest point we hit was 12.22. You know, besides Lawrence saying "I told you so," you know, are we going to get to a point where on 1 January we were on 16.16? So that was the highest point in 2020. We're not quite at the high point yet. We're going to 15.45 at the beginning of August. That's predicted. What do you think? Where do you think this is going to go? Do you think it's going to go north of 16.16?
There's a silver lining here, George, mm-hmm. is that it's stabilized. We're not seeing massive fluctuations in either direction now. We're sort of just seeing the small little incremental ones that come with the price of oil. I think with everything that's happening in China, everything that's happening in the Middle East, the elections coming up in the US, everybody is sort of just taking a step back and just saying, okay, let's just see what happens before anything else. And what that's done is it just caused a stabilization. So price of oil is stabilized, which means our petrol price is going to stabilize and is really only then tacked onto the rand US dollar exchange.
I'm not convinced. I think it's just going to hit the roof. It's going to go 17 rand, knowing our governments, who knows what's going to happen.
Well, more reason to drive electric cars.
Doom and gloom.
I'm kind of with Wandy there. I think we're going to hit 19 rands a litre before the end of the year.
That's
my prediction. So let's see if I'm right or not.
I hope you're wrong, Martin. It's the first time I've ever said that. I hope you're wrong.
So do I, because my car drinks copious quantities of 95.
Which one? That Land Rover?
No, George, the Land Rover is still broken.
Oh, freaking hell. When are you going to get this flipping thing going? We all want to know. Where's the picture, by the way?
I actually haven't visited the Land Rover in a while. It's in the workshop.
I see you haven't given the Land Rover a name. Does the Land Rover have a name?
Yeah, Oboz.
Why? Because it's old or because it's broken?
Yes.
Yes to both. interesting stuff. Well, in another story, Audi South Africa has announced an affordable service plan for older models. Now, this is interesting because, you know, everybody buys a car. Not everybody buys a new car, but, you know, when you buy a car, it's always a good idea to buy one with a service plan because then, you know, the service plan is taken care of in the cost of the vehicle. You tack the cost of the service plan onto the cost of the vehicle. But that often, and in all circumstances, I guess, eventually runs out. And Audi South Africa now has announced that there is an affordable service plan for some of their older models. And this announced service plan starts at 4,800 Rand and it covers two oil change services over 2 years or 30,000 kilometers, whichever comes first, at an approved Audi dealership, of course. And the plan includes a comprehensive roadside assistance from Audi Assist and can be purchased from any or on any Audi model. Interesting. That is between 6 and 13 years of age, but there is a mileage limit of 270,000 kilometers. How many kilometers has your Land Rover done, Martin?
About 180,000.
Oh, she's a baby.
It started breaking down at 40.
Okay. Well, there's a mileage limit on these Audis for the service plan of 270,000, or should I say, 270,000 kilometers. And can also be topped up at any Audi dealership in order to cover major service requirements as well. So, not only is it 4,800 Rand for the service plan, you can top it up. There are many older Audis out in the vehicle market. Actually, let's have a quick look on autotrader.co.za to see how many Audis there are available for sale. 2,907 Audis available for sale on autotrader.co.za. Let's see how many of those are under 200. All of them are under 270,000 kilometers on autotrader.co.za.
I think it'll help people sleep at night, right? Like the Audi R8, for instance, is notoriously known to break down the older it gets. So I think it's definitely a step in the right direction.
Well, what I want to calculate is how old is 6 years? 6 years takes us to 2014 and older. Is that right? So at the moment, we want a maximum year of 2016. And if we go for a maximum...
I have to say, though, I'm not convinced by this service plan idea. That comes down to two services for 2,400 Rand a piece.
Don't derail me, Martin. I'm on a roll.
Far out of warranty.
I'm on a roll. 1,513 Audis available for sale on Autotrader right now that are older than 2016. So there you go. If you go onto autotrader.co.za and you go and buy an Audi, there's 1,500 of them available, and you can go and get a service plan on them. All right, so back to Martin. Sorry, you were saying.
Yeah, sorry about that, George.
Don't apologize to me.
If your car is 6 years old, if your Audi is 6 years old, it's not under warranty anymore. And in that case, it makes pretty much no sense to take it to an Audi dealership for a service in any case.
What?
I can guarantee you can get the same oil service at an aftermarket franchised workshop, or, well, let's call it a chain workshop, for about half that price.
But it includes roadside assistance as well. It's not just the service. It's more than just changing your oil.
So you could pay, I think, $400 a year for AA membership, which will also give you free roadside assistance.
Do you hate Audi, Martin? Is that the...
No, actually not. The best car
he likes Land Rover, especially the ones that don't drive.
No, I just don't see real value for smart shoppers in this service plan. I'm sorry.
What are smart shoppers?
Well, smart shoppers, people who actually think before they swipe their credit cards.
So personal.
Smart shopper.
I can promise you, Wandy, an R8, for instance, which will cost a fortune to service, will not get that service plan extension for 4,800 Rand. It starts at 4.8, so that means you're probably going to pay 4,800 for a 1.9 TDI A4 or something. That's cheap to service in any case. And again, I think in the long run, you're going to lose more on interest. And just by paying more than it's actually worth, I'm not convinced.
On the next show, I want you to come and bring me how much it would be for an R8, and then we'll weigh the pros and cons.
That's a good idea. Let's put Martin on the spot. Next time, Martin, you come back with what does it cost to service an R8?
All right, I'll find out.
I have watched somebody do it, and I can promise you, removal of the rear end of the car to change spark plugs is, your labor costs are going to be quite high.
Except that the spark plugs on those things last 400,000 kilos.
Yeah.
Well, there are 34 R8s on AutoTrader for sale older than 2016. So there is a good reason to go and get the service plan. So Martin, you coming back with is that your commitment? Are you coming back with a calculation
for next day?
You'll find it out.
And I'll also find out how much the service plan for an R8 will cost.
Good idea. In the same vein,
I'll buy you dinner. How's that? Let's put something.
You can't. You have to buy him freaking takeaways. It's lockdown. You can't buy him dinner.
Mr. Delivery.
It's a courtesy of one Dili Sishi. Here's your dinner, Martin. McDonald's. And on the same vein, what's the difference between a warranty service plan and a maintenance plan? Lawrence Martin, you know, I know you guys wrote something about this in about February. Well, Arne wrote about it. But what is the difference between a warranty service plan and maintenance plan? Because often people get confused. Oh, I have a service plan. I have a maintenance plan. I have a warranty. But they are different.
I can speak to the warranty. The warranty is basically the manufacturer saying, my product is this good and I'm guaranteeing it for X amount of time. So if anything happens to the car during that time that falls within certain parameters, you bring the car back to us, we fix it for Mahala. As far as the difference between a maintenance plan and a service plan, yeah, I'll let Martin explain that.
Well, before you get to the difference, Martin, let's first, it's probably safe to say or a good idea to say that when it comes to a warranty, it does not include wear and tear parts. So when Lawrence says something breaks, if your brakes wear down,
That was what I was saying.
There are four of them, Martin. Last time I checked, there were four sets of brake pads on the car. If your brakes wear down, your brake pads wear down, that is a maintenance cost. It's not under the warranty, right, Lawrence?
Correct. Okay, so any wear items, so clutches, suspension parts, brake pads, fluid refills, batteries, key fob batteries, anything like, you know, you really have to read the owner's manual exactly what the warranty covers, and there usually is quite a lengthy list of exclusions attached to that, the things that they won't replace, and you know, in some cars they will cover the steel of the body, and other manufacturers won't. So if you live by the coast and you have a certain car and it rusts through and you take it back to them after 2 years, they're going to tell you, sorry, you should have read your owner's manual.
Well, so read the small print is what you're saying in the warranty.
When it comes to the warranty, yes.
Martin.
With the service plan and the maintenance plan.
Well, let's give Martin this one, because he's, you know, in your own words, he's better placed to unpack these differences. Yes,
the difference between a service plan and a maintenance plan, a service plan essentially just covers the normal scheduled service items. In other words, every 15,000 Ks or whenever the car decides, if you have a BMW or some such, it will receive an oil change, it will receive new filters, it will get a new pollen filter and spark plugs and the like, as stipulated according to the maintenance schedule. So that's the service plan. But the maintenance plan adds a whole bunch of other things. Maintenance plans also include generally wear and tear items like the brakes or the clutch or CV joint boots or suspension bushes. There are still some exclusions regarding the maintenance plan, but it's far less than you'd get with a warranty, for instance.
Does the maintenance plan cover everything
in the warranty? Covers the service. So rather see a maintenance plan as an expanded service plan that covers some wear items as well.
Okay, that's a good description. I like that description. You know, so really go and have a look at the fine print, because warranties do not cover everything. And as Lawrence points out, there is fine print. And as Martin points out, the service plan and the maintenance plan are nuancedly different, is what I'm hearing, right, Martin?
That's correct, George.
That's correct. So moving on to the next story, and that is, everybody knows we're in lockdown, and you know, your license might have expired. Be that your driver's license, be that your learner's license, be that your car license. And we've had some extensions. Most of them, I think, are up to 90 days. The licensing departments are inundated. We are battling to get appointments. If you try and go and get an appointment for one of your licenses, you're gonna wait. But the trouble is, what if that 90-day period expires? So now the AA is calling on all South Africans to petition for a license renewal extension. Wandi, tell us the detail about what this license renewal extension actually means and what we have to look out for, you know, if the AA get this right. And the AA is the Automobile Association, if you didn't know.
I think something to highlight is if you have a driver's license and it expires, you're still fine. You don't have to, there's no real big challenge there. You just have to go and renew it. When it's convenient to you.
Well, yes, but if your driver's license expires, because we spoke about this, I think I unpacked it last Friday. Your driving test is an indefinite thing. Your driving test is valid forever until they change it under the new laws that are being proposed. But your driver's license card expires. Now, if your driver's license card expires and you go over the extension period under lockdown, you can still get fined. You can still get pulled off the road, right?
Correct. So that's kind of, but you won't have to go and redo a test or anything like that.
No.
Whereas what the AA is really upset about, or what they want people to petition about, is for people who have temporary licenses or a learner's license, which expires and has a set date before you have to go and redo a test. So they just essentially just want the government to allow for an additional leeway for people who essentially had their temporary licenses expiring, so they don't have to go and redo. Now, the challenge is not necessarily the extension, but the fact that during COVID, if somebody in a testing station, for instance, gets the virus, it's closed until they get healthier.
Yeah.
It's closed indefinitely until, you know, they can reopen. It's not necessarily something to do with an extension, but rather that's just the situation that we're all in. So the lines are kind of blurred with regards to what happens in that scenario. Do you have to go to Durban to go do your test now because, you know, in Gauteng, they're all closed? And it's just basically they're just asking the government, please, can you work with us during all of this confusion?
Okay, so let's see. Let's follow that closely. But the AA is petitioning and calling on all South Africans to lobby for this license renewal extension. And as Wandile unpacks it there, it is potentially a risky thing for you to drive without a license because you can get fined if this extension period expires, which I think expires at the end of August, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. Yeah, end of August, and then back to square one, we're fighting again and confusion again. So,
okay.
Important.
Yeah. Well, leading from that, so if your license of your vehicle or your driver's license, for that matter, has expired and you haven't been able to renew it, will your insurance pay out? Because these things have ramifications. What's ramifications? I don't know what ramifications are, but it has ramifications. And so if your driver's license or your car license has expired and the extension period at the end of August has come and gone, which is kind of a month and a half away now, will your insurance company pay out? Now, we've heard some instances where people have got SMSs and communication to say that their insurance companies will pay out. I think that if you're listening to this, go and ask your insurance company to give you confirmation of whether they will pay out or not. If your licenses expire after the end of August, don't wait until the end of August to do it. Even if your license expires in September and you go past the 21 days allowed for your car license, or your driver's license expires in September, which is post the extension period, then you still can't get an appointment and you can't get your license renewed, then do it now. Because come the middle of September, what if the insurance company turns around and says to you, no? So rather get the confirmation now. I mean, what do you think, Mr. Sishi?
Well, there's no harm, right? And that's coming back to the story that we just said. You know, you don't really know when things are going to get back to normal. So rather just be on the safer side you know, I personally don't know. My insurance has not told me anything. So I'm potentially at risk if I am in an accident. So just rather safe than sorry. Double check. It doesn't hurt to just protect yourself.
Exactly. Anyway, on to a bit of home shopping. Hijackers, they've got a new tactic. They are, because there's not as many cars on the road because of lockdown, hijackers are now following people to their homes. And it's hijacking still remains a serious threat. And they're now targeting home workers. So driveways are now classed as prime hijacking hotspots. People are going to put up those, you know, you get those hotspot signs that you see at some intersections. So the stay-at-home message is served to embolden car hijackers during the time of fear and uncertainty. And this has actually happened to a few people, and that is they get hijacked in their driveway. So just be careful, because hijackers are still out there. They're still doing their thing. They've just changed their modus operandi. So how do you protect yourself in your driveway? And if you're working from home and you're fearful of getting hijacked, how do you counteract this threat? So beef up your personal security is the first thing. You know, how do you do that? Ensure that the gates can't be lifted off the rails. So, you know, many of these electric gates that we have now, or not now, but for a long time, especially the older ones, you can lift those rollers straight off its rail. If somebody can't lift that gate off its rail, they can't get to you. And thieves and hijackers, they won't hang around for too long. If it's difficult for them to get to you, they will go on their merry way, and hopefully don't do this to somebody else. So check for vulnerable spots where a fence can be bypassed. So where your wall, go and do a perimeter check around your house and check where your vulnerable spots are, because what you don't want is people getting into your property, because that's how you're going to potentially be hijacked. Install burglar bars on windows and security gates on and all doors. And then while working from home, avoid leaving high value items on display. Don't say, look at me, because that might just attract people to come and steal from you. You guys ain't got any other tips. How do you protect yourself?
Be aware of your surroundings.
So from Martin, be aware of your surroundings. Wendy?
Yeah, I stay in a security village. We have, I wouldn't say armed security at the main gate, but if you don't have an appointment or a code to get in here, they ain't letting you through the gate. We had an instance with the courier companies that are now dropping things off. Mm. One of our colleagues had the courier company got hit in the entranceway to their complex. That's also something. It's just keep your eye on that. But yeah. I can't exactly say to everybody, get some security at your gate, because that's not an option.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, I think.
Martin?
Yeah, be aware of your surroundings. If you see anything, let's say you're approaching your house, you see another car following you, or you're about to leave the house and you see a suspicious looking car or something that you haven't seen close to your house. Rather be safe than sorry, and make sure that the situation is actually safe.
Yeah, if you belong to a security company, call them. Safety.
Sorry, George.
If you belong to a security company, call them before you leave your house, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because in the end, your safety is down to your down to yourself. It's your own responsibility to make sure, or to try and make sure that you remain as safe and secure as possible.
I mean, we'd all love to think that security is up to the police or the security is up to your security company. But at the end of the day, you are responsible for your own security and safety. You're absolutely right. You know, not that they can abdicate, but, you know, you got to look after yourself. And that takes us squarely out of the news and into some auto talk. And today we are reviewing the Hyundai i30N with our own resident journalist, Martin Pretorius. Tell us about the Hyundai i30N.
Okay, I'm going to be brutally honest about this car. Look, let's first tell everyone what it is. It's a golf class hot hatchback. It's also the only i30 we're getting in South Africa. The model range as a whole was discontinued, so this is a very special thing. It's the only i30 of this generation we're getting, and it's the very top level one as well. I have some mixed emotions about this car, but I also have to admit that within the first 5 kilometers of driving it, it made me giggle like a little kid who just received an amazing present. So the upsides, or the upsides and downsides, we'll get to those a bit later. But the basic specs, 202 kilowatt and 353 newton meters going to the front wheels through a 6-speed manual gearbox and limited slip diff. So all the basic hardware is there. And it does actually use this hardware very, very effectively. Hyundai claims a 0-100 sprint in 6.1 seconds. I don't quite think that that's realistic. I still have to do some performance testing on this car one day when I get another chance to drive one. It feels more like a 7-second car. It's roughly on par with a Golf 7 GTI, maybe slightly quicker than a Golf 7 GTI on acceleration. But it's a far more involving driving experience. If you're a keen driver, this would probably be the Hyundai of choice for you.
Does it go for the par, like a GTI?
It actually does. They managed to, program in a crackle map in a manual car. And that's the first time I've actually seen this in a car without an auto box. So
it's got a DSG part without a DSG.
So on the steering wheel, there are two buttons. The left one is for the normal drive mode selections, and the right-hand one is for N mode and N mode custom, where you can adjust things like the suspension stiffness, the steering weight, the throttle response, the noise level from the exhaust. It actually has an active exhaust as well. So all sorts of things you can configure individually. My preferred setup with this car was engine in maximum attack, stability control in sport mode, limited slip diff in its most aggressive mode, and the suspension in its softest, because it's already very, very firm. It's not really the car you'd buy if you prioritize comfort. For those people, rather get a Golf GTI for a lot less money. And that actually brings us to the next problem, the price tag. 680,000 Rand for essentially a Golf GTI competitor. If you go look at the price lists, a normal GTI is something around 610,000, and a GTI TCR, the hot one, and also a very limited supply, is 670,000. So it's about 10,000 more expensive than the most expensive Golf GTI. That leaves it in a very difficult market position in South Africa specifically, because we love GTIs. I mean, South Africa is the only market in the world where GTIs actually outsell the normal 1.2 and 1 liter turbo diesel Golfs. So we love our GTIs, and this car is up against some very stiff competition. And here's the problem. When you're driving this car and you're not hearing around, it's very odd. Spectacular inside the cabin. There's nothing really nice to look at in terms of the sat nav. It doesn't even have sat nav standard. So when you're driving at absolute 10-10s and you're going all out, it's an absolute blast. It's a giggle, and it is one of the most engaging front-wheel drive cars I've ever driven. But for the other 98% of the time, it's actually pretty ordinary. And that's a bit of a letdown. I'd like the car to entertain me more when I'm not acting all sorts of, or acting out all sorts of socially irresponsible fantasies.
Like,
can I ask you something?
Yeah.
You mentioned limited numbers. How many of these were earmarked for South Africa?
I think it's less than 100, Lawrence. I'm not actually sure of the exact number.
So there you go. It's like exclusivity. Yeah.
Well, there's only one.
And you're dealing with other Hyundai fanboys, and you can say, I have one of 99.
Well, there you
know, you might be buying it. It's an investment car, if you think about it.
Well, yes, because of its rarity. And underneath all of that, it is actually a really good car. I'm just not convinced that it's 70,000 or 60,000 rand better than a normal Golf GTI.
There's only one important thing.
Yeah. And if it were my own money, as much as I enjoyed this Hyundai, I would most likely add another 60,000 on top of it and rather get a Civic Type R, which does everything this Hyundai does, but turned up to 13 instead of just turned up to 11.
And all the time.
And all the time. Well, even if you're sitting in traffic, the Honda's entertaining. When you're sitting in traffic with this car, it's just kind of meh.
Well, let's see. Maybe the Hyundai i30 can make this sound.
Us, actually. So it sounds really good. It's really fun to drive. And I think if you frequent track days and the likes, you will find great satisfaction with this car. I also think it might become an appreciating asset in the future on account of its rarity. Maybe the first collectible Hyundai of all time. Let's see.
That is a bold statement from Martin Pretorius, a collectible. Hopefully it doesn't become like that Land Rover, which is a collectible because it can't drive anyway. Martin knows I'm only putting his leg. Right, Martin?
Yes, I do.
So there you go. Go out and get your Hyundai i30N limited edition. Not limited edition in terms of its livery, but a limited edition in terms of the number of vehicles that are earmarked for South Africa. There, the Hyundai i30. Maybe we'll see the Hyundai i30 up against the GTI at some point.
Check out the review. It's live on autotrader.co.za along with some nice photos. The review actually expands on my thoughts about this car. On the one hand, I love it. On the other, I'm not quite sure.
Well, let's move on to the BMW first electric iX3 is bound for South Africa. And the concept iX3 2 years ago, and I love it when concept cars become reality. I mean, I'm not a big concept car fan. I don't get all excited when I see a concept car. But this one I'm pretty excited about, and it's bound for South Africa in the final quarter of 2021. Now, Land Rover Jaguar allowed me to drive the electric I-Pace some 2 weeks ago, and I was fortunate enough to keep the car for a week. And I must say that I fell in love with that car. It is everything everybody says it is. Turned up to 15, Martin. I didn't break any speed records, but I managed to get 0 to 100 in 4.6 seconds. They marketed, I think, at 4.7 seconds. I managed to do 4.6 seconds, and that car goes like a bat out of, well,
and it just doesn't stop.
Just doesn't stop. So I'm assuming that the electric iX3 from BMW is going to deliver similar sorts of immediate torque, because I also drove the BMW i3. Yes, the i3 some time ago, the little car. And that thing delivers also I mean, it's 0 to 100 in, I think, 5 or 6 seconds, 6 seconds. But for a little car with an electric motor not as big as these SUVs, it also put the power down like a bat out of hell, and I loved driving that BMW. Every electric car that I've been inside, I've been impressed with. The BMW i3 is no different. So I'm assuming the BMW iX3, which is South Africa bound for the end of next year, is going to be exactly the same. And I can't wait to get my my claws on it and drive it. And it's got an electric e-drive motor pump that outputs 210 kilowatts and peak torque of 400 newton meters. It has a gross energy of 80 kilowatt hours. We have to start using new terminology here, Martin and Lawrence. 80 kilowatt hours, and translates into a range of about 460 kilometers. Now that is impressive. 460 kilometers out of an electric car is impressive. And, some test cycles seem to have got 520 kilometers out of this car. So its top speed is electronically limited to 180 kilometers an hour, similar to the I-Pace. The I-Pace is also limited, which is a good thing because you get there very quickly. I was going to use another word. You get there very, very, very quickly. You get there very quickly that you can't remember how you got there. Does 0 to 100 in 6.8 seconds, and as I said, delivering 210 kilowatts. Martin?
Yeah, George.
You said something, and I cut you off very rudely.
Roughly on par with 30i versions, the four-cylinder, the high-output four-cylinder turbo petrol in terms of performance. But I must say...
Did I just hear you compare an electric car to a petrol car?
The fact that they managed to pack 80 kilowatt hours into this thing is pretty impressive. Yeah. But what's really interesting is I see that the power only goes to the rear wheels.
Yeah, so I suppose that's what's causing the 0 to 100 in only 6.8 seconds and not much faster. You know, if you compare that to Tesla P100D, you've got power to both the wheels, which then makes it incredibly quick.
Much, much faster, yeah.
It looks like it's going to be built in South Africa as well. Which
lovely. Well, that's BMW's traits, right? They build stuff in our country. So you know, all things being equal, I can't wait for this car to actually be on our road so that we can take a good look at it. Obviously, battery pack down in the floor as usual as electric cars go. On to our next story. Ford's new Bronco makes its debut after 20 years, but will it come to South Africa? What do you guys think?
I had the pleasure of contacting Ford South Africa 10 minutes after the live reveal was done. And I was told in no uncertain terms that no, the Bronco will not be coming to South Africa because where it's being manufactured, they do not have the facilities to make right-hand drive versions, which automatically excludes it from local introduction. And there are no plans to bring it to the country because at a starting price of about $79,000, you do the maths. Go buy yourself a Raptor or a Jeep. Fully stocked Jeep Sahara. You'll be happy.
Jeep Sahara, beautiful car. Well, there you have it, I suppose.
I see the two dill one day.
It's the point of talking about this car anymore.
The release is a color I'd like to call OJ Orange.
I had the I-Pace in a beautiful, beautiful orange and black.
Now, this is more like a mustard orange juice.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about this car anymore. It's not coming to South Africa.
not coming to South Africa.
Yeah, I don't even know why we're talking about it.
Some enterprising guy is going to find a way to bring one over the border. I can tell you that now.
Yeah, but you still can't license it and drive it because it's a left-hand drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's actually a company in Alberton that does right-hand drive conversions on various, and I think there's one in Cape Town as well. They do right-hand drive conversions on various American vehicles, and I suspect that this thing actually has a fair bit of Ranger underneath. The chances are that they'll be able to convert this to right-hand drive using Ranger parts.
From what I heard, the two-door is very, very close to a Cougar chassis. So,
I know, I'm tired of talking about this car. Let's get into some tech talk. Catching an Uber could change things into the future, because Uber is now changing the public transport system. And urban transportation transformation has shifted up a gear as the coronavirus crisis turns travel habits on their head. And Uber is making allies of public transport systems and now offering to sell them its software expertise. Because let's be honest, Uber is the biggest transport company that owns no vehicles. Like Airbnb is the biggest hotel company that owns no beds. And Auto Trader is the biggest automotive company in South Africa that owns no cars. So in Uber's case, the streets of Utah, Salt Lake City to Missouri, St. Louis, and New Jersey's Jersey City, more than 120 U.S. transit agencies have launched collaborations with ride-hailing firms in the past 2 years. Now, I mean, I didn't even know this was happening, to be honest, but it makes absolute sense. Because one of the things that, you know, we always say in business is stick to what you're good at. And if you're good at, you know, taxi services or that sort of thing, then you're really good at the transport network. Let somebody else take on the technology that allows you to be even better at it. And that seems to be what Uber is doing. Uber and Lyft, both, as a matter of fact, not just Uber. What do you guys think of this? Do you think it's a good idea? Do you think it should come to South Africa? Do you think there's a chance of it coming to South Africa?
It makes sense. I used to catch the bus when I was in like primary school.
Yeah, me as well.
And my biggest pain was having to go and get bus tickets and, you know, and like making sure that I was on the schedule and all that nonsense. So with this, it's just my phone. I can just be like, oh, yeah, I want to take the bus now and go. So
you're not actually calling the bus to you like you do with an Uber. You're going to a bus stop and then checking the schedule that they've supplied when the Uber bus is coming.
Yeah. All right.
I'm not sure, but I mean, it makes sense if it's that way. But still, regardless, it's still just like a simpler way to do things and it makes sense.
Well, the one of the counties in Miami in America began replacing night buses with subsidized ride hail trips during the pandemic when rideship dropped by as much as 80%. So, you know, the transport systems are taking massive amounts of strain. I think this is a brilliant idea. And you know what? Bring it to South Africa. I don't see why not. And then
one reason.
Yeah.
The taxi industry.
What about it?
The taxi industry will not allow this to function in South Africa.
But it's easier.
Yes, but it's a South African taxi industry.
Huh. I would think it would make life easier for both the taxi owners as well as the riders. Because then, you know, I mean, if you think about it, a lot of people, I mean, let's talk about those the taxi situation for a second. When a taxi commuter gets onto a taxi, what are they doing? They're handling cash, right? Okay. That is a way to potentially spread the virus, is by handling cash. So this is a way to create more social distancing, number one. And number two, make it very, very easy for a rider to pay.
Yeah, I think because taxis are kind of, there's no schedule for them, right? They just come when it's convenient for them. So I think the logistics of it would be the challenge in South Africa.
No, but it doesn't have to be scheduled. Look at Uber. Uber's not a scheduled thing. Come on, Wendy. Right? Uber's, like Ubers are busy parking around the place and you just get on the, oh, there's an Uber near me. Push the button. Isn't that the same as what the taxi system is?
But it's definitely a step in the right direction.
I can see it working with a payment system where you can pay for your ride without having to have cash on you.
Yes.
Cardless payments, tap to go.
Exactly. Exactly. I think it's brilliant. I think that taxi owners and taxi infrastructure will benefit from something like this, both from a social distancing point of view as well as from a convenience point of view, and then also all of the riders, based on the app on their phone, know exactly where the taxis is. I know how to speak English today. They know where the taxis are because you can just go onto the app and okay, there's a taxi And then you'll be able to decide where to stand. You won't have necessarily taxis pulling over just anywhere and everywhere.
You don't have to learn the hand signs.
Yeah, the hand signs can go. Yes, that's true. The hand signs can go. Which, I mean, I love the hand signs. So it's part of our heritage.
Yeah.
Do you know these hand signs, Wendy?
I do. I used to take a taxi for years.
Serious?
Yeah.
Give us some of them.
Quite a professional when it comes to the hand signs.
Okay, go. Tell us some. Like, what are the most common ones?
Town.
What is that? Town. Oh, is that town? And now, which town do you know you're going to go to?
Town is town. The town is town. The taxi driver always knows. I don't know how, but town is town.
And that's town.
Yeah.
Okay. What is this? What, is it like waving your hand, sorry?
Short left.
What? Turn left next?
I'll keep the rest for the next show.
Okay. All right. I think what we're going to do is we're going to do a piece on taxi signaling. That's a good idea because we need to get into our next story, which is Jaguar Land Rover launches a subscription service. So a subscription service called Pivotal, Pivotal in the UK. Now Pivotal is aimed to affluent again. What is wrong with me today? At affluent millennials who don't consider buying a car in the traditional sense. Now, you're a millennial, Wendy. Owning a car, is that important?
Super important, but the price of owning a car is a super inconvenience.
So cost of ownership.
This is like Christmas coming early when I read this story.
Okay. The subscription offers users the option to change their vehicle every 6 months. And it's abundantly clear that millennials, people born between 1980 and 2000, when were you born, Wendy?
95.
Squarely a millennial, right in the middle. They don't see cars. So one dealer doesn't see a car as important as his parents' generation. With the advent of e-hailing services, public transport, and many other younger people able to work from home and purchasing a car has fallen down the pecking order. Is that right, Wendy?
Yeah,
well, mode of transport.
It's not like I love cars, so I'm different, but it's owning a car is the challenge because it's just so expensive and there's no need to like really own one anymore. There's so many different services.
Is it the cost or is it just because it's something that performs a function? I mean, for you, you love cars, so it might be slightly different.
Yeah, it's a little bit skewed for me, but like speaking to my friends, they don't see the need at all. Like, it's just like the functionality of a car is pretty much where it ends. And because there's so many other options and alternatives to having one yourself, what's the point when even houses are expensive? Rather get that, you know?
I would say buying a house with debt is also a bad idea because all you're doing is renting money. You're not buying a house. A lot of people will disagree with me, but
my father always used to say, you can sleep in your car, but you can't drive your house.
That's true.
I'm with that one.
Oh. So Jaguar Land Rover is the latest company to put their weight behind a program like this and allow customers to switch their Jaguar Land Rover models between them every 6 months. This, as I said, this thing's called Pivotal. And the program is seen as an alternative to the traditional car ownership and leasing schemes, available only in the United Kingdom for now. And users pay a monthly fee, including a rental, insurance, tax, and any service and repair costs, and a once-off joining fee is required. Now, Jaguar Land Rover expects 10% of all vehicle sales in Europe and the United States to be attributed to subscription service models by 2025. And that's close to 16 million vehicles. You know, I suppose what's disappointing is that that number is only 10%. So, it's big enough, 16 million vehicles, but it's only 10%. But I suppose all you younger guys and girls that are in your late teens have yet to start to think about a car. And maybe in a couple of years' time, this becomes an important thing. Owners have a maximum mileage threshold of about 2,400 kilometers a month and can have up to two named drivers in the contract. So, let's see where this goes. I mean, I think it's a good idea. It's a good option. It's not necessarily something that that I would do, but somebody like Wendy might, because you might see him pitching up in a, I don't know, Ferrari to the office when we eventually open it.
Yeah, that's the plan. So watch the space.
And then in other tech news is Apple Maps updates its iOS 14 to reduce electric car range anxiety, which I think is awesome. So iOS 14 is coming in about mid to end September. And a lot of people with electric cars, not with electric cars or considering electric cars, have to consider range anxiety. How do you get from here to KZN and recharge the car? Or, you know, what if you get down to 100 kilometers to go or 15% battery life? You know, you get range anxiety with your phone, when your phone starts running out of power, range anxiety with your phone. Charge anxiety, I suppose. So Apple has confirmed that the new EV routing feature for electric car owners in Apple Maps is taking into consideration your vehicle's range and charging points along your route. And at the Worldwide Developers Conference 2020 keynote, and this is now going to be part of iOS 14 updates for iPhones. I think this is a brilliant move. You know, Apple Maps started off on rocky territory. They really started off on rocky territory. They got it totally wrong, and they should have stuck to Google Maps, but they've upped their game since, and this is a good feature. You know, it's not clear how many electric vehicles will be compatible with the EV routing launch, but Apple says it's working with manufacturers including BMW and Ford. Now bear in mind that part of this you know, WWDC 2020 was also the key fob app that that Apple is sporting for the BMW. I think it's the 5 series, if I'm not mistaken. What do you guys think about this technology and reducing range anxiety?
It's a no-brainer. I would be interested to see how many manufacturers jump on board, but I would think that the manufacturer would actually have their own app for this sort of thing. I don't know how electric vehicles work, but you assume that.
Yeah, I'm quite surprised by this as well, because all the electric vehicles I drove had their own built-in nav systems with listings of charging stations, and some of them are even connected to the internet. So they know exactly what or how many charging stations are open and where they are.
Well, I mean, that's a good point that Martin raises is, you know, the software of the car itself is going to be able to tell you this stuff. So, you know, is it necessary in Apple Maps? It kind of gives you an indication of where Apple's head is at. Because the in-car enhancements for CarPlay are getting updates as well, with the ability to change the background of the CarPlay screen. I don't know if you've seen the Apple CarPlay screens. You guys must have seen the Apple CarPlay screens. It doesn't have an inspiring background. Now you can change the background of the Apple CarPlay screens, plus the addition of a new CarPlay-enabled apps. And the new apps include parking, electric car charging, and rest stop information. And Apple is reimagining the key fob too. So like I said, it's going to be available in the 2021 BMW 5 Series, if my memory serves me correct. Yes, it does. And the digital key appears in the wallet app. Have you used Apple's wallet app? I use Apple's wallet app for boarding passes. You know, so you can, I mean, I think this is an indication of, you know, Apple wanting to get into the electric car game. And you never know, they're building up all this capability. Next thing?
A car.
There's a car. Exactly. So, Martin, while, you know, you're absolutely spot on, why would you have this technology if the car does it, right? Well, you have this technology to get the data.
Yeah.
And then when you got the data and you launch a car, you've got the data. And you're ahead of everybody else suddenly. It's very clever, almost like Tesla, recording all of the kilometers or miles driven for every single Tesla around the world.
I think it will also be very good for, let's call it, value-added services, where the app can tell you, okay, so you can charge your car here. There are so many bays open. And while you're there, you might be interested in looking at that shop, which has this special on.
Exactly.
Like you said, it's all about the data.
All about the data and then monetizing it. So the final story in our tech talk is new Ford's F-150 onboard generator can power a ridiculous amount of equipment. So, Wandy, tell us about this onboard generator in this Ford F-150. I mean, trust Americans to go big or go home.
Yeah, this is a car that was made for South Africa that just never arrived here, clearly.
Flip. I don't want to talk about this anymore. Carry on.
It has everything that you would want, during load shedding. You can power so many different things, and the output of it is so insane that it should just be an electric vehicle, really, at this point.
So what is it? Is the engine charging batteries and then using an inverter to output that power? How does this thing actually work?
So it seems like, yeah, I think you're spot on there. Basically, it has an output option as part of its giant battery, where when it's not being used for just the normal driving around, you can use it, or you can double it up as also a generator to, you know, do things such as, you know, if you're a constructor or someone who works on the road and you just need a power source, this can double up as that.
Oh, wow.
Wow. The wild track that I just tested had a 230 volt inverter in the rear for the rear passengers. I don't know why you would want to boil a kettle while you're driving, but the car can do it. It has a 230 volt inverter output, 3-point plug. Strange as hell, but yeah.
And they can power your television, your heater, speakers, a fridge, a jackhammer. You know what I mean? Like anything.
Freaking hell.
It
can power a jackhammer. I mean, jackhammer's got to be seriously hungry on power.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, the output is what, 2,400 watts or something ridiculous.
2.4 kilowatts. Yeah,
it's perfect.
I can apparently run a jackhammer for up to 85 hours.
A jackhammer for 85 hours.
I don't know why you'd want to do that, but it's probably nice to know that you can.
I suppose, you know, why didn't this car come to South Africa? Does anybody have a clue?
F-150's left-hand drive market, they don't make it in a right-hand drive.
Mm.
Unfortunately, that sort of precludes the F-Series vehicles for coming here. And the few F-Series vehicles that they are floating around in South Africa are, of course, the ones that have been converted to right-hand drive.
Well, there's another story there as well. The F-Series Fords have grown so large and so heavy that most of them will not be able, well, most drivers will not be able to legally drive them because they need a Code 10 license.
They don't fit in a standard size parking lot in South Africa. They are almost as wide as a road. And yes, the few Dodge Ram 1500s that came into the country actually had to be fitted with a chevron on the tailgate because it is classed as a truck.
Medium commercial, yeah.
Medium commercial truck, and you have to have a Code 10 license to drive one.
So that's why we don't get the F-Series Ford anymore either. That's why a couple of years ago we had F-250 imported by Ford for some buyers in South Africa, and it proved to be surprisingly popular. Only problem is they could only bring it with a 5-cylinder diesel and with 2-wheel drive because otherwise the gross vehicle weight would have gone into truck territory.
Exactly.
Well,
but you know, Ford does keep us in their thoughts, and they do have specific vehicle. There is a vehicle on its way called the Ford Thunder. So keep your eye on social media around that because I think it's based on a Wildtrak. But it has a lot of the F-Series stuff attributed to it. But it's not the same size as an F-Series. So keep an eye on that.
That's very interesting. You know, and, you know, I like big cars. I like the Ford F-150. And I wish they would bring this car to South Africa, to be entirely honest. Well, that... That brings us to the end of our tech talk. Let's get into some industry talk. And my name is George Minnie, and I'm the host of your industry talk segment. And I am joined by none other than Martin Pretorius, Wandile Sishi, and Lawrence Minnie to talk about the industry and its happenings, both here locally in South Africa and sometimes overseas. I suppose, gentlemen, the first thing to really kind of focus on is there's reason for cautious optimism when it comes to the used car market in South Africa. That's according to Autotrader's data. And Autotrader points out that there's a number of positive trends in the automotive industry at the moment. And one of them is prices have begun to increase, albeit slightly. We saw a little bit of price deflation at the end of lockdown. Lockdown has not ended, so it's not the end of lockdown. Let's not, this podcast is not going out sometime in the future, 10 years from now. So it is not the end of lockdown. And if you are listening to this podcast in 2035, then we did have lockdown and we did go through this crisis. Nonetheless, we are still in lockdown. And now that lockdown's being eased, to be a little bit more serious, prices have begun to increase again, even although that is only at a rate of about 1.2%. Cars are also selling faster than what we experienced at the beginning of this year. And that could be because the swing to used cars from new cars, as consumers consider the used car market, has started to accelerate. And you know, when there's an increase in demand, there is there's upward pressure on pricing in terms of a normal economic model. So this isn't price hikes or any of that stuff. It's really just economics. And Autotrader's used car rate of sale indicator has been released for a couple of months now and indicates that the rate of sale and the Autotrader's retail pricing index both indicate that we are selling cars faster as well as prices are slightly going up. And according to this data, the fastest selling vehicle in South Africa at the end of June was the VW Polo Vivo. Well, I mean, that's not too much of a surprise. And the VW Polo Vivo sells within about 25 days. So, you know, if you priced right, you can sell it Polo Vivo in about 25 days, because that's what the market's doing at the moment. And the popularity of the VW brand, I think, is behind this, because there's two in the top 10, VW Polo and the other podium positions are the Fortuner, which is the second fastest selling car in the month of June at 26 days to sell, and then followed third by the Hilux at also 26 days to sell. So, Wendy, what do you think about the retail price index at 1.2% and the rate of sale, and who's in that list?
So starting on the rates of sale, it almost completely makes sense. Every single car that's listed in the top 15 are the most popular selling cars in South Africa. Obviously it's not the same rank as, you know, the most selling, but I mean, it's interesting to just see the popularity and the speed that these vehicles are being sold for.
Well, what's interesting to see is the VW Polo sells in 25 days, and you almost double that in the top 15, where the Ford Figo is in 15th place at 44 days. So the top 15 is a big range of speed to sale in days in the top 15.
I think it also boils down to how many cars are being sold and the popularity of the brand. Something that you just mentioned now is Volkswagen it completely dominates the market. People love them at all different sizes, at SUV level, at smaller levels. They have a car for you, essentially, and they priced really well. And safety-wise, people are just picking them up because of all of these different features.
Well, I mean, South Africans love VWs, Toyotas, BMWs, right? Mm-hmm.
There's a Renault. The Quid is also there, which was, I think, in the new car space. Correct me if I'm wrong, Lawrence, but it's also one of, you know, a very popular car in terms of not just speed, but in terms of sales numbers.
Mm. Yeah, they were moving about 3,400 of them a month across the country, which is,
So I mean, those brands: BMW, VW, Toyota. Are the popular brands amongst South Africans. So, you know, what's interesting to see is that the Nissan NP200 has crept into position number 5 when it comes to the fastest selling cars in South Africa for the month of June at 28 days. I mean, do you think that's got to do with all of the lockdown and food delivery and taking advantage of the new normal?
I think it is exactly that, George. We saw last month quite a large uptick in commercial vehicle searches, guys looking for small delivery buckies, caddies, small MP300s. Obviously, these are people that are getting into the delivery game. I wouldn't be surprised if they but they also have the market share. There are no small half ton of buckies for sale now.
That's true.
Sort of buying down. It makes sense for people to just. It does everything you need. It's a workhorse, right? It's small, but it is a workhorse, and it's priced really well. So,
and it drives like a car.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting for me that you point out here, Wandy, is that Mercedes-Benz isn't in the top 15.
No, it's not in the top 15. It was previously, but it was also at like number 15. So as popular as Mercedes cars are, it seems like people don't pick them up as fast as their competitors. It could be a price point thing. It could be, a number of different things, but for a brand that's so popular and so loved in South Africa, it's interesting that it's not picked up.
So the retail price index from Auto Trader shows about a 1.2% increase in average prices, and that takes us to the average price of a car in the month of June of 274,221 rand. And used car prices continue to rise, not in a hyperinflationary environment, and hopefully we never get there, because we all know what that means, but that's not the case. A 1.2% price increase, it's really reflective of demand and supply. And that also brings us to the end of our Auto Central show. And any final thoughts, Wandy?
Just keep your eye out. Hijacking is obviously on the rise, so just be safe. And don't forget to move your car every 2 weeks, I think it is. Take care of yourself.
Take care of yourself. Final thoughts, Martin?
Yeah, be aware of your surroundings while driving, or whether you're pulling into your driveway.
Absolutely. Wise words from Martin Pretorius there. Lawrence, final words.
Two things. Check the expiry date on your car's license disc and your driver's license.
True that.
And then keep an eye on social media, because there is a lot of really, really interesting stuff happening around new car launches and new vehicle models being introduced over the next 2 weeks. So, keep an eye on social and check your expiry dates. See you next week.
Okay, so that brings us to the end of another Auto Central week. Cheers, everybody.
Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on cliffcentral.com. cliffcentral.com